In this episode of Dietitians Only, we're chatting with Michelle Schneider. She's here to talk about the great strides she has made at her facility with malnutrition care. Many dietitians wonder how to document malnutrition with repeated hospital readmissions or when there has been improvement in nutrition status. Michelle shares her expertise and discusses how she and her team of dietitians have moved the needle on malnutrition at their facility.
You're listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast from Dietitians on Demand, created by dietitians for dietitians. Let's get into it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Dietitians Only. This is Sarah Glantz, and we have a special guest today. Her name is Michelle Schneider, and she's a dietitian coming from Wisconsin. She works at Froedtert Hospital in Milwaukee. And she's here to talk to us about some really exciting initiatives that she and her team are doing related to malnutrition. So just want to give a little bit of background on Michelle. She's a certified nutrition support dietitian and also certified clinical transplant dietitian. And she has over 13 years of experience working in critical care. She's been very involved in her hospital's malnutrition program since the Academy and the Aspen consensus paper came out in 2012. And she's been looking for new ways to improve malnutrition practice at her facility. Michelle's also an NFP trainer with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and she serves on the WISPN Board of Directors. That's the Wisconsin Society for Parenteral and Enteral Nutrition. She serves on the board of directors, and she's also an active member on several Aspen committees. She's well-published, so you might recognize her name, and she's presented at a variety of local, national, and international programs. Michelle received the Recognized Young Dietitian of the Year Award in 2016 and a Distinguished Nutrition Support Dietitian Advanced Clinical Practice Award in 2020, and she became a Fellow of Aspen in 2021. So I met Michelle at Aspen 23 conference, and she was talking a little bit about the malnutrition initiatives at her facility. As you guys know, I'm very passionate about malnutrition. So I was like, we have to have her on the podcast. So welcome, Michelle. So glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're really excited to talk to you today. So like I said, in this episode, we're going to hear about what Michelle's doing to improve malnutrition care at her facility. So hopefully we can all learn a thing or two from what she's doing. And without further ado, let's jump in. So Michelle, do you want to just tell us a little bit about your current role at Froedtert, what you're doing, and what types of things you work with?
Sure. Currently I'm the lead clinical dietitian at Froedtert Hospital. It's a 800 plus bed level one trauma center, academic medical center. I've been there for 13 years, but in my current role for about 7 years. And in my role, I'm half clinical, so I see patients in the ICU all around the hospital. But then the other part of my job as lead dietitian is doing a lot of training and onboarding for our new staff. That includes kind of a boot camp day for parenteral nutrition, for enteral nutrition. And then we do a full day training for nutrition-focused physical exam and malnutrition documentation and that whole process as well, as well as little projects. And I kind of describe it as projects as assigned is part of my job description. So I kind of dabble in a lot of little things.
Okay. Well, that really sounds like a fun gig. It's kind of like the best of both worlds. I think a lot of dietitians would enjoy that type of role. So tell us a little bit about how you got motivated to start making some changes related to malnutrition at your hospital.
Well, I think you said in my introduction, it kind of all stemmed from the consensus statement that was published in 2012. I remember going to Aspen's conference that year, and that was the first year that I really started hearing about malnutrition with more of a definition than I'd ever heard before, and starting to hear about nutrition-focused physical exam. And I started thinking, well, this is going to be a big add to my clinical practice, and this is huge. I don't think this is going to go away. So I brought that back to my hospital, started learning as much as I could about nutrition-focused physical exam, and developed our program to standardize the way that we do physical exams, document malnutrition. And really, it's kind of just grown from there. When we started documenting malnutrition in 2013, I think it was, We did an analysis of what percentage of discharge patients carried that diagnosis, and it was less than 0.5%. So, you know, looking at the literature, that 30% of hospitalized patients are estimated to be malnourished, we were at less than 0.5%. I knew that we had a lot of work to do in terms of identifying these patients early, then identifying it, then documenting it, and appropriately documenting it so that it can get captured for coding and reimbursement. So it's just kind of grown since 2013.
Yeah. Kudos to you for being such an early adopter and for taking the information that you learned at the conference and saying like, hey, we can do this too, and we need to do something about this. So that's incredible. So at this year's Aspen conference, like I said, that's when we met, and I attended your like a little roundtable discussion about malnutrition. And so one thing that really struck me is you talked about the continuity of care. So when we have patients who come in, they get their malnutrition diagnosis, and then they leave, they discharge, maybe they're readmitted and they probably still have malnutrition to some degree, or maybe it's improved, maybe it's worsened. So how do we capture that? So can you talk a little bit about that initiative that you started?
Yeah, for the last couple of years, that's been a big topic of conversation. And I think the missing piece the whole time was ambulatory care. What happens in the outpatient setting? What happens when they come back to the hospital? How do we track this diagnosis across the patient's continuum of care? Because I had mentioned, we had started looking at coded diagnoses of malnutrition and reimbursement. That's all inpatient focused. And I'm an inpatient dietitian, so I'm biased from that standpoint. But the more I started to think about it, especially for these patients who are discharged and readmitted, maybe they've gotten better and they don't specifically meet the criteria for malnutrition today, but we're still treating it to, you know, resolve this diagnosis. What do we do in that gray area? So I started asking questions like, you know, how do we capture this? How do other providers capture diagnoses like this? Is there any other situation or diagnostic group where this situation might happen? And we're really fortunate to work with a quality physician who does a lot of our coding and reimbursement and denials and things like that for malnutrition. She's wonderful. And she said, you know, we do that for other diagnoses. We can, you know, say someone comes in for a knee replacement, but they have heart failure. They're not being admitted for heart failure. That's not why they're coming in for treatment, but it's still there. We're still continuing their heart medications. That's something that we're still going to code for and still capture in our diagnoses for reimbursement, because this patient is sicker than just coming in for a knee replacement. So we started thinking about malnutrition in the same way. So if we are addressing, treating, monitoring, or evaluating, I said that backwards, but the acronym for that is MEET. So monitoring, evaluating, addressing, or treating. If we're doing any of those things for malnutrition during a hospitalization, we should be documenting that. We should be coding for that, because that really captures the patient's full picture and what we're doing for them. And then the other side of that is outpatient. What happens when they go outpatient? Because that's been a big source of frustration for our ambulatory dietitians, as we talk about, you know, coding and reimbursement for malnutrition, but they've really never been included in that conversation. So I'm one to ask a question over and over until I get a different answer, because sometimes things change. And things changed about a year or two ago. And the answer to that question is HCC coding. So again, this quality physician, she was like, you know what? I think there is something that will allow us to capture malnutrition diagnoses in the ambulatory care, outpatient care setting. So HCC coding stands for hierarchical condition category coding, and it's the ambulatory equivalent of case mix index. So you're capturing this diagnosis once in a calendar year. As many times as you can is better, but at least once in a calendar year to really kind of demonstrate the severity of illness throughout the ambulatory clinics and the kind of care that we're providing to, you know, these types of patients. And that determines reimbursement for the following year. So thinking about it as a continuum, you know, we capture this diagnosis. why should documentation or treatment change if they change care settings? It's still the same patient. So we kind of changed our mindset from thinking about malnutrition diagnosis in silos of this inpatient admission or that clinic visit to this patient is in the hospital. Now they're going to the clinic. Now they're coming back to the hospital and we're updating their diagnosis accordingly. So they might have a new diagnosis today. And then in 1 month, it might be an ongoing malnutrition diagnosis because we've reevaluated it and they still meet all the criteria. Then 3 months later, they're continuing their nutrition supplements, their vitamins, whatever, you know, the treatments are, and it's improving. So they no longer have those exact criteria that they were diagnosed with in the first place. But we can say it's improving malnutrition because their physical exam is getting better, their weight has stabilized. And then eventually the goal is to say, this diagnosis is now resolved. So you kind of go full circle with the diagnosis, no matter what care environment they're in.
That's incredible. And I have so many questions that spawned from what you just said. So I know a lot of our dietitians use the PES statement to document and diagnose malnutrition as like a nutrition diagnosis. So when you have, I know there's standardized terminology for a nutrition diagnosis of malnutrition, but when you have this, like you described, a gray area where patient was diagnosed with malnutrition maybe two admissions ago, they're back, they still have malnutrition, but it's improving. So how do you document that, or what does the documentation look like when you have that gray area type of situation?
Yeah, that's still an area that some of our dietitians, myself included, we're still kind of getting used to it because it's a little bit of a change from that initial PES statement. So in the initial PES statement, you're going to have all those signs and symptoms that exactly meet the criteria for malnutrition. When they're improving, we document it so that we'll say, you know, improving malnutrition. We'll do in the context of chronic acute illness, whatever it is. And then the signs and symptoms, we essentially say, we'll put comments in there. So physical exam is improving, but there's still some depletion noted. You know, weight has stabilized, although they had initially lost weight. So it kind of varies by dietitian, but the level of detail that's in the initial diagnosis isn't there. It's more so an update.
Okay, gotcha. I like that analogy of, you know, calling it an update. And then as far as, you know, with the coding, has it been enough time for you to see, like, is that documentation successful in supporting the official medical diagnosis of malnutrition? Because it sounds like it's not as clear cut, you know, not as detailed. So is that documentation working?
Yeah. So we document our updates or the continuum of care updates the same way that we document the initial diagnosis in terms of medical diagnosing or medical coding. So we have a nutrition diagnosis note that we send to either an attending physician or an advanced practice provider. They go through their documentation to say, you know, yes, we agree with this diagnosis and the interventions that the dietitian has included in their note. So all of that looks the same, no matter if it's a new diagnosis or if it's an improving diagnosis with just an update on, you know, how they're doing, all of that looks the same. So once the physician or APP documents it, it'll get coded the same. We do run coding reports monthly, and it's been between 9 months and a year that since we've implemented continuum of care. And with any change, there's going to be some growing pains. You know, it's not all going to be perfect or beautiful for the first couple months. We had a lot of work to do to all get on the same page and really fully understand the workflow. I think that we are seeing a slight increase in coded documentation of malnutrition, maybe 1 or 2 percentage points at the very most. The other question, though, that we ask is, what about reimbursement? Is that going to increase reimbursement? And the quality physician that we've been working with, she's like, you know, it should increase the percentage of coded cases. It might not increase the reimbursement, again, because it's kind of a gray area, because insurance companies are looking for exactly that you know, consensus statement criteria or GLIM or whatever set of criteria you're using for malnutrition, maybe that's not exactly there. So they might not reimburse for it appropriately. And the conversation that we had was, that's okay. It's still the right thing to do for the patient, for their care, for their communication, or for our communication to the team about what's going on with them. So in terms of coded diagnoses, I think it has increased a little bit, although I think it still might increase more the more we get used to this workflow and the more efficient we get at it. I don't know that the same is going to happen with reimbursement, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think it is the right thing to do for the patient. And the reimbursement, I think, is tricky. As you know, with the inpatient coding, you know, malnutrition is the CC and the MCC, the complication and comorbidity, or the major complication and comorbidity. And so if there's already an MCC or a CC, then, you know, malnutrition kind of washes out anyway. But like you said, it's the right thing to do. And so talking about clinical outcomes, you know, have you seen any change in, you know, these patients that you're documenting on the continuum of care? Have you seen any change related to like their readmissions or their length of stay? Because I'm sure as you guys are documenting and strengthening the documentation and the recognition of malnutrition, your interventions are probably, you know, stronger and more consistent. So have you seen any effects on clinical outcomes?
That's such a good question. And that's the question that our team is asking right now. We haven't been tracking outcomes as it relates to malnutrition just yet. That's something that we're actively talking about and trying to build reports that would reflect that information. I think, though, the biggest fruits of our labor, if you want to call it that, so far has been the ability for us to really see some of our patients resolve their diagnosis. I don't think that we've ever really paid attention to that before. If it's not there, we just didn't diagnose it. But we're really able to see it improving and resolving in certain cases. But then in other cases, we're able to say it has actually worsened. And maybe we need to start talking about nutrition support or being a little bit more aggressive with our interventions, because what's happened up until now hasn't been effective. And maybe it's because of the nutrition intervention. More so, or more likely, it's probably related to their medical condition and the decline from that standpoint. But it's, I think, given us a little bit more in our tool belt to be able to say across or through time, here's what's been happening. I think it's time to take this next step. Maybe we need to place a feeding tube. Maybe we need to talk about parenteral nutrition. So I think even from that standpoint, it's really helping to justify our interventions. But I'm really excited to move to the next step to look at how that relates to patient outcomes as well.
Okay, cool. So you talked about being able to see malnutrition being resolved and tracking that. And you describe that as like the fruits of your labor. So how have your dietitians and even the other hospital colleagues responded to this? You know, have you seen any pushback? Have they been supportive of the initiative?
I think in general, everyone has been supportive of the initiative, because when you talk about it in terms of like thinking about the patient and their care across all care sites, it makes sense. So there hasn't really been any pushback from that. And I don't know that I would even call it pushback. The challenges that we've seen has just been in adopting a new workflow. Change is hard. Any new workflow is going to take time to get used to. It's going to take time to understand. So we've been doing a lot of check-ins. We've been doing audits. We've been doing just open communication in terms of, you know, hey, I saw this documentation. Let's look at the continuum of care. Let's look at, you know, how we should be documenting this. There's a little bit of a gap here. Okay, let's talk through that. Let's understand that. Next time, it's not an issue. So we've been doing a lot of that. But I don't even think I would call that pushback. So it's been very well received. It's just a new workflow. And then from other clinicians, we haven't really heard any pushback or concerns from our medical team. Our physicians seem to be supportive of it, because, again, it's in line with what they do for every other medical diagnosis. So, you know, they're like, yep, we do this for heart failure. We do this for wounds. We do this for, you know, COPD. We do this for everything. So adding malnutrition to that, I think they didn't ever even really think twice about it. Our director and our VP who attend all of these meetings for, you know, hospital initiatives and things like that, they're very much in support of this. We have a lot of focus on outpatient care and preventative care. And I think that this kind of ties into that, because if you're thinking in silos, you're really not thinking, you know, where were you and where are you today? Now we're more so thinking in that mindset, and it's maybe shifting a little bit to keeping people out of the hospital, keeping them in our clinics, bringing them to our clinics to keep them out of the hospital. So I think that we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from that standpoint as well.
That's awesome. It sounds to me like you guys are just ahead of your time, you know, like you are having this mindset of how can we manage these issues and these nutrition concerns on an outpatient basis and, you know, hopefully prevent things from spiraling out of control. And I think that is such a forward-thinking mentality. And that's, you know, the direction of healthcare is to try to reduce costs and reduce the burden on the patient and manage them in an outpatient setting. So I think it's awesome what you guys are doing. And so what would you say to dietitians who are maybe just getting started with NFPE, or they're just getting started with malnutrition documentation, or maybe they're pros at malnutrition documentation and they're looking to take this next step like what you're describing?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, if you're just starting off with NFPE or malnutrition documentation, I say kudos, congratulations. That's an exciting place to be, because this is such an important part of the care that we provide as dietitians, is being able to recognize this condition, because it can really impact so much of a patient's medical care. So that's exciting. Learn as much as you can about the process. Identify your own weaknesses or the areas that you want to grow in, and seek out resources to do that. There's so many resources out there. And then in terms of, you know, taking the next step for your malnutrition care, I've been at my hospital a while now, and I think my motto has become think outside the box. You know, it's, you don't really get anywhere by thinking, well, this is how we've always done it, so this is how we're going to keep doing it. You know, I love my crazy ideas. I think my boss, you know, gets a little bit of, you know, heartburn from my crazy ideas sometimes, but I say, think outside the box, ask a lot of what if questions, ask questions of other disciplines, because we're clinicians and really everybody is there to take care of the patient and, again, keep them out of the hospital and give them a great quality of life. So just keep asking questions about how you can do better.
Awesome. Well, we do have some good resources in the show notes. So if you are just getting started or you want to learn more about malnutrition care, we do have some good resources in the show notes. So you can always check those out. But I think we're going to wrap it up for today. And again, want to say thank you to Michelle for joining us. And thank you for what you're doing in your facility, because it does matter. And it's obviously very impactful for patients, you know, as they move from the hospital to the outpatient and, you know, on to the rest of their life. So you guys are definitely making a difference. And, you know, we love to stay in touch and just hear as you get some of that information related to reimbursement or clinical outcomes, or as this program evolves, we love to do another check-in and see what's going on.
That'd be great.
All right. Well, thank you, Michelle. And thanks everyone for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast produced by Dietitians On Demand. If you need a break today, scroll over to the review section of the podcast and leave us one. Your feedback is the best way to help the podcast grow. Dietitians On Demand employs hundreds of dietitians nationwide and elevates the profession with simple yet effective practice resources, like this podcast. Don't forget to stay connected with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.